Tell me, all-seeing eye, what's today's petrifying patent topic? Ghoulish games, you say? Including a deep dive into the IP of the Ouija board? Wicked. Let's get to it then. I'm Julie King of King Patent and Business Law, your witchy guide to all things dark and mysterious in the world of patents, trademarks, copyright, trade secrets, confidential information, and more. You may not know it, but they're all around you, every day, almost everywhere you go. You can't escape them. I must warn you, this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It doesn't create an attorney-client relationship, and this does not make me your lawyer. Last year, I covered some trademark tales of terror about popular horror films, and this year I'm talking about patents ranging from the cute accessories to the truly bizarre inventions. We started off nice and light, but we creep a little further into the world of the eerie in this episode, covering horror-themed board games. First of all, I have to share that there is a highly specific patent classification for horror games. Classifications are a way of narrowing down the subject matter of an invention or patent so you can more easily find what you're looking for when trying to see if the invention is identical or too similar to one that's already the subject of a patent or patent application. An invention can belong to multiple subclassifications if its various parts being claimed fit under them. For example, a fortune-telling game may fall under one subclassification for fortune-telling games and another for games involving a pendulum. One is A63F3/00148, and in the patent classification system, that means it falls under classification A for human necessities and play is necessary for a balanced life, right? 63 is a subclassification for sports, games, and amusements. Then we get to subcategory F for a group of certain types of games, narrowed further to 3 for board games. Then we get to the very specific subclassification of 00148, which is board games concerning westerns, detectives, espionage, pirates, murder, disasters, and shipwreck rescue operations. Another is, instead of that 00148, 001, which is for board games concerning astrology, religion, or fortune telling. Mind you, this doesn't include electronic fortune telling games, which are under A63F9/181. So how cool is that, that spooky board games get their own classification in the patent system? Let's look at a few of those games now. I want to note, I'm not the attorney for any of these patents. I just found these by doing a search in Google Patents, which means you could search in there and find spooky patent treats of your own. I promise you're going to want to stick around to hear about the third and last game I'll cover in this episode. You know it well. If you don't stick around, I may just turn you into a toad. The first we'll cover has expired for failure to pay maintenance fees. Utility patents have 3 points in their 20-year lifespan at which maintenance fees are due, and if you don't pay them, the patent dies prematurely. I'll talk more about that on Friday. Because this patent was abandoned, one of you could make and sell it. Maybe the time is right now, or maybe it never was and never will be. It's called Themed Board Game. That doesn't sound very scary, but that's just the title of the invention. The game itself is called Halloween Afternoon at Dracula's Castle, and it's a 3D board game. In this game, players move their tokens around a board in the shape of a haunted house, castle, headstone, pyramid, or other creepy shape. Players roll dice to see which horror character, like a vampire, witch, or werewolf, they encounter in what event, like a scream, an odor, or a howl happens. Meanwhile, the players are trying to solve a mystery, kind of like the game Clue. They also draw cards called spookology cards, lucky unlucky cards, and possession cards. The game is pretty complicated, and these drawings from the patent show that. We have a drawing of a possible board, the haunted house, another drawing showing some of the tokens and card storage accessories, and several drawings showing the cards. There's another depicting the tracking chart players use for keeping track of clues. The description of the invention is full of fun phrases like Halloween atmosphere and Dracula's domain. While the description and claims are very detailed about how the game is played, the specific rules aren't part of that description. That's because game rules are protected by copyright law rather than patent law. You don't have to register a copyright with the Copyright Office, but registration is necessary for some enforcement benefits, and it's pretty easy and inexpensive to register. Now we'll creep further into the forest of freaky games with our next example, which has a name that starts off dull and ends with a what now? And that's board game involving the concept of exorcism. This patent's application was filed in 1974, so it was almost certainly inspired by the popularity of the classic movie The Exorcist from 1973. That movie terrifies people to this day, so you'd think an exorcism-related game would be pretty terrifying, right? Wrong! This looks like the kind of game designed to disappoint a bunch of 12-year-old kids at a slumber party who got a hold of their big sister's game and thought they were in for a good, creepy game. The gameplay has players move their tokens on a board, rolling dice to advance to certain spaces towards the middle. If the space they land on says Devil's Possession, they add a piece to their token, showing they have sold their soul to the devil. Players can even voluntarily sell their souls to the devil. Isn't that nice? A possessed token gets to play by different rules, of course. If a player with a possessed token lands on an exorcism space, they can challenge the devil and roll dice to see if the exorcism worked. Now, maybe with proper playing pieces and a creepy board, maybe this could have been unnerving. But look at this soul drawing for this board. Oh my God, it puts me to sleep. There was so much petrifying potential here, and instead, what's petrifying is about how boring the inventor made the game and managed to make a popular, terrifying subject a snooze fest. I have a feeling it didn't sell well, but guess what? I actually found it on eBay. I'll show you a picture, but I'm not going to give you a link for the listing because I may have to buy it for nerd reasons. Now, buckle up, my beasties, because we are about to do a deep dive into the world of divination. I've saved the most iconic board game for last. I'm now going to talk about patent and trademark rights to the most famous horror board game of the century. You know it. You may be scared of it. If Regan McNeil had left hers alone, Captain Howdy might have looked elsewhere. Movies have been spawned from it. It's in countless TV shows. It's been around for long, long years under several names and possibly stolen many a man's stolen faith. Alternatively known as a talking board or spirit board, it's the Ouija board. While talking boards have been around for centuries, perhaps millennia, the earliest patent for one in the US is 1891 from inventor Elijah Bond, and it expired well over 100 years ago. The US Patent Office initially refused to issue the patent on the grounds that it didn't work. One of the requirements for a patent to be granted is that it's possible for the invention, as described in the application, to work. Well, Bond took the invention to the patent office and demonstrated it to the chief patent officer, who asked it to spell his name, which he didn't think Bond knew. And it did. Well, then the patent officer decided he would indeed approve the patent to issue. Now, maybe the board worked its mysterious ways, or maybe it was that Bond was a patent attorney, so it's no leap to think he didn't know the name already. Now, the application just claimed it worked, yet it didn't say how it worked. These days, the application would need to be much more detailed to avoid being rejected. As long as it describes how the players touch the planchette and that it moves around the board, once the players touch it, it would likely be fine. There could be a utility patent for the method of the game and a design patent for how it looks. The Kennard Novelty Company, owned by Bond and business partner Charles Kennard, made and sold the game. By 1892, an employee, William Fold, had taken over the company and renamed it the Ouija Novelty Company. Fold licensed use of the term Ouija to a new business owned by himself and his brother in 1899, and they took over manufacture and sale of the Ouija boards. Fold eventually split with his brother and kept the name Ouija and started his own business with the boards in 1901. His brother defied an injunction and marketed a nearly identical board under the name Oriole, and the two feuded about that in court until 1919. Apparently, the board was useless in court for determining who had what rights. Cleverly, by 1919, Fold made cheap knockoffs of his own product to combat competition from others selling talking boards. He made and marketed them under several names, including Mystifying Oracle. Fold's family continued to run his company and make and sell Ouija boards until they sold it to Parker Brothers in 1966. Now, the patent doesn't cover the name of the invention, just how it works and maybe how it looks. The name is protected under trademark law. Medium and spiritualist Helen Peters Noseworthy, who was the sister-in-law of inventor Elijah Bond, claimed to have come up with the term Ouija in 1890. Fold, as a successor to those rights through the Kennard Novelty Company, registered a trademark for the word Ouija in 1948 as it pertains to the games, claiming his rights to use the term started in 1890 because he was the successor in interest and now owner of the rights originally held by Noseworthy, Kennard, and Bond. After those rights were sold to Parker Brothers in 1966, they were assigned to General Mills Fun Group, Tom's Food Limited, which is not who you would expect to be making Ouija boards, and CPG Products Group in the 70s, then to Kenner Parker Toys, then Tonka in the mid-80s, and then finally to Hasbro in 1996. That made the term off limits to others making talking boards, which is why you will see them referred to commercially as talking boards or spirit boards instead of Ouija boards. I assume Parker Brothers and Hasbro licensed the use of the name in the game to makers of the original 13 Ghosts movie from 1960, in which the family plays the game, of course, The Exorcist, as well as the 2007 and 2014 movies called Ouija, and the 2016 prequel, Ouija Origin of Evil, because they definitely own the registered trademark rights to the word with regard to movies. A famous horror movie from the 80s called Witchboard was originally called Ouija, but the film's lawyers found out after filming was done that they couldn't get the rights to use the word Ouija or even use the Parker Brothers version of the game in the movie. So they had to change the name and put up a bond in case there was litigation about use of the board. Fortunately for them, there wasn't, but this is why you should make sure you have all the various intellectual property rights you may need before you start filming a movie, TV show, TikTok video, etc. The notorious occultist Aleister Crowley loved the Ouija board so much he wanted to work with one of his own students, Frater Achard, to develop their own and sell it. Now, Crowley may not have been afraid of the devil, but he was afraid of the consequences of trademark infringement, so he made note that they'd need to call it something other than Ouija. Another version of a talking board that received a patent is from 1920 for a version invented by Harry Bigelow that has the letters and words in a straight line with a planchette on a track and gliding on bearings. Other variations that received patents were an electronic version from 1938, one that records what the board says from 1985, and several variations on layout, looks, etc., including an application for one for cats, where the possible answers are purr, stalk, rest, etc. That one is currently pending. Plenty of versions of the game have never been the subject of patent applications. My personal favorite modern version of the game is, of course, the glow-in-the-dark version. There are a variety of other Halloween and horror-related board games that have received either utility patents for how they work or design patents for how they look or both. While utility patents cover the methods of how the games work, the rules of the games can't be patented. Rather, the rules are covered by copyright law, so you'd want to register them with the US Copyright Office. Tokens, game characters, game boards, packaging, etc., might be able to be covered by a utility patent if it's for how they function, a design patent or copyright for the way they look, and sometimes by trademark law if they become iconic enough to represent a brand. If you're creating a board game or any other kind of game, it's a good idea to consult with an intellectual property attorney about how best to protect your game. We've come to the end of this episode, so it's time to think about what tasty patent treats and bonus trademark tidbits to remember from this episode. Number one, inventions and patents are broken down into classifications that relate to the various parts of the invention being claimed. These classifications get pretty specific and are designed to help people find patents related to a particular topic more easily so they can see what patents already exist in the field, even if they're expired. Number two, games can be protected through patent registration for utility patents for what they consist of, how they work, and how they're played, though not the specific rules themselves, and for design patents for how they look. The actual rules are covered under copyright law. The way game pieces and packaging look may also be protectable under copyright law. The name of a game is possibly protectable under trademark law. Number three, The application for utility patent for an invention has to show that the invention is capable of working as described. That's why you wouldn't want to include any reference to the supernatural taking part in how it works. Keep the spirits out of the application. In the next episode, I'll conjure up some truly bizarre, petrifying patents involving grave innovations and inquisitions. Watch it if you dare. My contact information is in my bio, so please don't hesitate to reach out and connect or ask questions. Thank you for watching.